Hello, and welcome to the special series in the Child and Nature Alliance of Canada podcast called Learning to Listen, CNAC's Reconciliation in Practice. I'm Monica Goodluck.
And I'm Petra Eberjesi, and we're your co-hosts.
Learning to Listen is all about our gradual and ongoing journey with Truth and Reconciliation as a white, settler-led organization working to support outdoor play and learning on stolen Indigenous land.
So, Monica, in this episode, you spend time with Lise Brown and Adrian Alfonso, developers of the Seven Relationships for Ethical Forest and Nature School framework, which is central to how CNAC works and is the framework around which CNAC's Forest and Nature School practitioners course has been rebuilt. Lise and Adrian share where the relationships came from and discuss how the seven relationships are a piece of reconciliation readiness and an answer to specific calls to action.
Yes, Petra, I really enjoyed listening to Lise and Adrian, even though we had a few moments of technical challenges during the recording. This conversation was so rich that I will be listening to it every time I prepare to co-facilitate a course with CNAC. And truthfully, this episode is valuable listening for everyone, regardless of your role, who works with children on and with the land. It's that good. The seven relationships in the framework are relationship with play, relationship with story, relationship with land, relationship with learning, relationship with trust, relationship with power, and relationship with risk. This framework is both a theoretical model with the learner at the center and a tool for assessing which relationships are in and out of balance. Get ready to go deep. So it's wonderful to be here with you both, Adrian and Lise. Am I pronouncing that right, Lise?
You got
it. Fantastic. And I think Adrian, is that right?
Yes, correct.
Great. I'd love to start by having you both introduce yourself briefly, and then we can get into more detail. Who'd like to go first?
I'd like to go first.
Thanks.
Hello, Aneem. My name is Adrian Alfonso. I was born and raised in Winnipeg to two parents. My mother is Anishinaabe from Treaty 4, Wewisikapo First Nation, and my father came here from Guyana, South America in the 70s, and I'm loved greatly by both families. I grew up listening to two ways of thinking and two ways of culture since my very beginning years in the early 80s. So currently I'm in Wasagaming, Riding Mountain National Park, clearly. And I love being outside and I love creating new experiences outside with people who are new to me or just very old friends. I believe in my heart that being outside and connecting is extremely valuable. And that's my values. Thank you.
Thanks, Adrian. Over to you, Lise.
Hello. My name's Lise Brown. I'm here in Treaty 1 territory on stolen Indigenous land, the heartland of the Métis Nation. And I've been here since I was a wee one. I live close to the Assiniboine River where I find peace in the middle of the city. I'm a mother to a 14-year-old, and my family comes from Treaty 5 territory, which is in northern Manitoba, Flin Flon, Manitoba, and I come from a family of miners, working in the mine, but also in the administration of the mine. And so when I think about my relationship with land, it can be complicated. But I was just recently back in northern Manitoba and felt so at home there. I miss it now that I'm back in Winnipeg. My work, I wear several hats. I am a clinical social worker, but also have been an outdoor educator for 25 years. So I see the value of land and mental health and healing. And I'm a business owner. I own an organization called Momenta. And our work involves thinking about how to create connections to land for everyone. So I'm happy to be here and always happy to sit with Adrian.
That's a fantastic segue to my next question is, what is your relationship to each other, Lise and Adrian?
Great. Well, this goes back many, many, many moons and cycles around the sun. I was employed by another youth-serving agency in Winnipeg in the early to mid-aughts as a program facilitator, and the site or the club that I was working at had some people come and work with the groups or the youth that we were serving. And I just really admired how it was much more engaging compared to how I was used to, and that the because it's so engaging that the youth that they're working with were happy and they looked like they were fuller. So I was curious about that. Not too long after that, I joined Momenta and we traveled to some communities and worked together, which was a really enjoyable experience. I got to learn a lot about what my leadership style is and how it's still valuable. I learned that listening goes a long way, and having fun is actually a priority to bring connection to each other. So, fast forward a few more years later, and I'm still with Momenta, and we're expanding in the types of work that we're doing. So, my love for bicycling or cycling has been a lifelong experience. So, I was a cycling leader and tour leader for the organization and the for Momenta at camps and day camps. And with my practicing of storytelling, a colleague and I, Justin Bear, were doing walking and biking tours in the heart of Treaty One or Winnipeg, and that is Nestawea or the Forks, and we were just having Indigenous-led tourism with a priority of by us, not about us, which was new in the Indigenous tourism sector. What else? My joy for outdoors is everlasting and always growing. And Momenta was the place for me to continue doing that. And also with learners. So, learners of all ages from everywhere and all abilities. That was really impactful to me. And still is. So with that, that's my relationship with Lise. Oh, there's so much more that we can talk about with that, but I think that's the essence of it. Miigwech, thank you.
Yeah, I could build on that. I think everything that Adrian said is true. We met, more than 20 years ago, when we were both working with youth in the front lines, and saw value in each other's leadership style, and kind of grew from that. But in the last 5 years, Adrian and I have really connected on thinking about truth and reconciliation and what that really means, what kinship really means, and how we create curriculum and programs that truly offer a two-eyed seeing perspective. I think what Adrian and I have learned over the years is that we're better together. that both worldviews that we come from, all of the worldviews that we come from, which is many, are important and have value. And so really honing in on the strengths of all those perspectives, can be such a beautiful experience for the learner that's within those spaces. I think along with truth and reconciliation work, we've done a lot of work about being radically welcoming and what that looks like and feels like for ourselves, but also the learners that we're with. And yeah, I think both of us have grown to be, I think, more grounded in our leadership with each other. And when I think about the seven relationships, which we're about to talk about, they are truly a partnership, and that feels really fun to talk about. So, yeah.
So let's talk about the seven relationships. What are the seven relationships? We hear about the seven relationships a lot at CNAC and throughout this podcast, in many episodes. The seven relationships are central. And you both had a lot to do with that. So tell the listeners, what are the seven relationships?
Well, the seven relationships are land, power, trust, story, play, risk, and learning. I did it without forgetting one.
Well, I was going to say, and could you, because I know what it's like as a listener, can you repeat them again? Not necessarily in that order. It is not a test. You've already passed.
Sure, the seven relationships are play, story, land, learning, trust, power, and risk. And the seven relationships are an assessment tool, a theoretical model, something that allows Forest and Nature School practitioners to feel grounded and confident in the work that they do. The seven relationships are meant to be a space that we hold the learner at the center of what we're doing. And we want to keep the seven relationships in balance when we're with learners on the land. And the seven relationships are now part of the national curriculum for the Child and Nature Alliance of Canada. And that is something that I feel honored to say and hope that it continues to be a tool that allows us to do work on the land in the right way with learners. What would you add to that, Adrian?
Well, I can only speak it from my personal perspective in this creation journey or categorization journey now that I'm reflecting on it. These seven relationships have always existed within Forest and Nature School. It just hadn't been correctly narrated to have relationships with each other before. They felt separated, and so this process of seeing both European or and young learners, maybe perhaps learners of all ages outside, and then bringing that to our Turtle Island, Canada, North America. Here we talk about land. So there was lots of relationships that were great to use. There was just a couple things that didn't fit in other categories that were left over, and we discovered that there was indeed six relationships. And then our learners were having some difficulties, and we're like, what is the whole? Why is it like this? It feels like we can't get this right. Where are we going wrong? So the last relationship, number seven, which is no correlation with the seven grandfather teachings of the Anishinaabe and others, of course, across Turtle Island. But the seventh was discovered as relationship with learning. We will have time to, we're here to discuss what the different relationships are, but when it comes to what the seven relationships are, is something that is forced in nature school from a worldview. But in Canada, we talk about land. And so we'll get more into that. That's what I have.
It's natural. I love these built-in teasers that we didn't even really discuss. They're fantastic. This is wonderful. Well, so let's talk. I'd love to hear from you a little bit about each relationship. And I will leave it up to both of you, like which one you want to speak to, you know, first, second, etc. Yeah.
Sure. I love to start with power because I think it's the most complicated of the relationships. And I think there's often some hesitation about having a relationship with power and what that even means in this context. When we think about ethical forest and nature schools in Canada, for Adrian and I, it's really important to acknowledge that we are on stolen Indigenous land. And that all comes from a relationship with power, or a relationship with a lack of power. But I think in Canada, we need to be honest and we need to be truthful about the land that we live on, that we get water from, that we get hydro from. And I think I want to continuously speak the truth to my learners, that land is, you know, healing, but it also is complicated. And when we think about the European Forest and Nature School, we don't necessarily have that context. If that model comes to Canada, that relationship with land is really missing from the European context, and not because they're doing anything wrong, it's because they're in a very different context than we're in. But relationship with power is also about who holds power. As a forest and nature school facilitator, I hold power because I'm an educator, but I can do that in a really beautiful way or I can do it in a really harmful way. And so when we think about relationship with power at forest and nature school, we want to let young people or learners have power over how they learn, how they engage with each other, how they have a relationship with land, and really think about how to empower learners from whatever context you're in as the leader or the educator. So relationship with power is a place where we ask facilitators to do a lot of work and a lot of reflection about their own power and privilege and how that comes to play at Forest and Nature School. And maybe I'll let Adrian talk a little or not.
Power and privilege wheel. What a tool. There's 12 sectors, and in the center is where you hold power, and on the outside is where the marginalized people are. So this takes an introspective ability to truly assess, speak your own truth in positions of power and privilege, and either find out more about the marginalized people within your intersectionality, or do some healing in that sector if you're not part of the power and privilege, to sort of find ways of decolonizing your not your beliefs, but what you've been told to be true, which is not true. And I think that's powerful for learners to speak their truth. That's one of the outcomes, is to be heard and to be acknowledged and to come around to be contributors to the circle of sharing, rather than a non-reciprocal relationship. So how do we get to a transformative relationship with learners rather than transactional, which is really great. Relationship with power.
I think with relationship with power, we also think about setting expectations so that when learners are within spaces on the land, they understand what the expectations are, that it's very clear that we create predictable spaces that are trauma informed. I could go on about relationship with the entire podcast, but I like to start with it because it's layered and it's important. And not because power is important, but because being reflective about power is really important. Adrian and I often talk about those with less power. We want them to have spaces of healing, and those with power, we want to have that's who needs to do the work to make sure that spaces feel good for everyone. It's
So,
one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite things to talk about at the course because I think when you can reflect on your power, you can do a lot of beautiful things.
yes, I know. I'm like, I could talk about power for a long time. And I don't know if this is the appropriate moment for it. Maybe it's as we go through the relationships or at the end. You are the ones who will guide this. Is one of you mentioned at the beginning about keeping them in balance. And I remember that in one of the guiding documents that we have at CNAC. And there's sort of a sentence of, you know, when this relationship is in balance and under each relationship, if you feel like it's a moment to kind of share one of those phrases for power, please do. Or we can talk about it or, you know, weave it throughout. What do you think? Is anything coming to you right now?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I wish I had it in front of me, but I think that we talk about a sense of belonging when power is in balance, that when an educator can let go of power, often the truth of the learner is allowed to like blossom. And so yeah, a sense of belonging and a feeling of acceptance, no matter who they are and how they show up.
Yeah, I've just pulled it up.
Oh, thank you.
When the relationship is in balance, the learner learns truths, feels a sense of belonging, and feels heard. I'll ask us to go on to the next relationship just in the interest of time.
Yeah,
Well,
well,
before we do,
yeah.
I would like to close each relationship with its verbed name.
Please.
So, Lise, can you please help us with relationship with power?
Yeah, relationship with power is how I show up. And that's in reference to everybody, how we all show up. Yeah, I hope I remember all the other ones as we go along. But we'll jump to,
I've got
we'll
them
jump.
here, if not.
Yeah. Relationship with trust is relationship with power's cousin or sister or kin. Because without letting go of power, trust is hard to show up. So getting them both in balance is really important. Relationship with trust is, I see it in three circles that are interconnected. We trust that the land has something to teach us. We trust that the educator has the ability to let the child lead or the learner lead. And we trust that learners know what to do, that they have it within them to be able to learn without without a lot of prompting, particularly if we're on the land. And so I think when we think about the education systems that we all come from colonized education systems here in Canada. And perhaps trust was lacking in those systems that we, as young people, had capacity and competence and the ability to have critical thinking and all of the things that we need to be really great learners. And so trust, I can feel it. Like when the kids know that I trust them, everything shifts. And it feels really good. But getting that balance can be really challenging for folks who have been taught to be teachers in colonized education systems. So it feels a little bit clearer than relationship with power, but I also think it's really, really, it takes some intentional work to really let trust be in balance.
I feel that relationship with trust takes a little bit of curiosity to join in and experience it because in other spaces it does not exist. And so our learners are often questioning at the beginning, like, I don't know what specific questions, but it rarely shows up that there's a space of trust and communication about trust. So once they get it, and there's frequent and often experiences of it, you can I've really seen some growth in them. Yeah, that's what I have.
Trust is so liberating to feel, to be trusted, like, right, to know it in your spirit. And I completely see the relationship with power, between trust and power. When this relationship is in balance, learners feel a reciprocal relationship between learner and educator. They feel empowered, they can be independent, and they're inspired to be themselves. That
That's
sounds
right.
pretty
As well as the educator.
right?
Yeah.
It's inspired to be
Is
yourself.
there a name for this one?
That I belong?
I trust you.
Oh, I trust you.
Which
I think
supports belonging?
yeah. I think the outcome is belonging. Yeah. Yeah. These are great.
Well, yeah. These are great.
It's
Thanks to both of you.
yeah, we don't often hear it read back at us, and so it's cool to hear it read back at us.
Well, cool. Thank you.
Relationship with land. We could jump to that.
I could start.
Yeah, go for it.
So, relationship with land was my filtering through previous curriculum when it comes to forest and nature school. I was looking through everything I could, including land-based education material, but also like Wander Kindergarten out of Germany and just the culture of European learning outside. It's looking at it all and combing through the previous CNAC curriculum, and it's all there. But there wasn't specific narrative of talking about the land. But in Canada, we talk about land. In any other place in the world, we actively will always have, always we are right now and always will. It's part of our relationship with the land here, as well as its peoples, including all people who have been here for just a few days as a citizen, or you have been here since time immemorial. Land, it brings us together. In Canada, we go outside. And in Canada, we have all four seasons. And so, in order to build capacity through learning, we go outside. So, winter, spring, summer, fall, there's much to learn and do in each one of those. Not just to learn about learning, but also learning about ourselves and our capabilities. And the truth is, lot Indigenous peoples have endured a lot in order for Canadians to be here. And so let's be grateful and go outside. So that's what I have to start with that.
Yeah, relationship with land. In order to have a relationship with land, you have to hang out with it and be on it and learn from it and listen to it. And I think relationship with land means we, just like Adrian said, we go outside all year round. We think about all weather systems as gifts. Forest and Nature School, we are thinking about returning to the same place so that we can see change of season, so that we can notice things, so that we can have wonder about things and curiosity about things. It's really important for us to connect to place. And for me, relationship with land is really about climate justice because without a relationship with land, we don't love land and we won't protect land. I think for Adrian and I, this is an emergency that young people, we want to teach young people to love this place because we need to protect it. And so relationship with land is, you know, both like all of us benefit from being outside, but also we need to figure out how to connect more people to land so that more people will protect land. Yeah, so that's relationship with land. Also another complicated relationship. But I think transitioning to relationship with story would be good. Because when they think about, oh, go ahead.
Before we do that, I wanted to read, is that okay? The balance and the peace. And I just also wanted to add, I've been thinking more and more. I live in a very urban setting. And while like there are trees and that around, but there is a lot of concrete and a lot of construction. And how much so many of us, the majority of us, really do just occupy the land. Like we're just on the land, do what we want with land. Get annoyed with land, try to destroy land, are so disconnected. It's incredible. And yet we are also like part of the land. Without land, there's no us. And I can't remember. I think Adrian, it was before we started recording, you'd said something about mosquitoes. I think about, the size of mosquito and the power, right, that one mosquito can have, like these tiny little elements that we ignore, try to get rid of, explain away, and don't have meaningful relationship with. So that one is very powerful for me as well. And what you have here is when this relationship is in balance, learners experience connection to place, regulated bodies, felt safety, confidence to play in all weather, generosity and love towards Mother Earth. And the words for this one are we gain wisdom. Yeah, that's a big smile, Adrian. I like that. That felt good. Feels right. All right, Lise, go ahead. You were going to go to relationship with story.
It's funny because I was just thinking about as you were talking about relationship with land. About 5 years ago, Adrian and I and some other colleagues had the privilege of interviewing 25 Indigenous leaders in Manitoba about relationship with land. And one of the individuals said, "Just go outside. It's right there. Just look out the window." And I think about that all the time. I think about that even in my office. I'm in the middle of a concrete jungle and I'm still in relationship with land. and, you know, teaching young people that it's okay to just go outside right here, right now. It doesn't have to be an elaborate adventure to connect with land. That land is everywhere. We have a boulevard here at our office that's, I don't know, 12 feet by 6 feet. And when we moved into this office, it was concrete and a old tree that had a disease. And today, if I think about what's there, is like so much life, this little garden that we've been nurturing with the children over the last few years. We have monarchs hatching and yeah, just so much life in such a small patch of urban city that, you know, it makes me think that anything's possible, that like if you let land return, it returns. Anyway, relationship with story is my favorite way to think and teach, which may seem obvious by me storytelling just now. But relationship with story is about connecting to my own story, but to your story and to all of our story, but also the story of this place and this land. Forest and Nature School practitioners have to know what's going on with land, the story of the place, what happened, what is happening and what will happen. Thinking about the past, present and the future, what is the story for the individual, the group and the land. And remembering that, you know, since time immemorial, we've been learning from stories. And so storytelling is a, could be connected to relationship with learning, but needs to be honored as a way of growing and discovering and learning and all the things. So, I also think that when we think about telling stories, we can tell new narratives, we can tell decolonized stories, we can tell truthful stories. Relationship with story is just such a beautiful part of being a teacher and an educator, but also a beautiful part of the Forest and Nature School practitioner courses, where stories emerge and people learn through story.
Yes. The Wendin or Anishinaabe Moan is truth. And I'm going to share a story about a time that I invited several classrooms of grade 8 girls to share. Each one of us, we went on the circle to share what is horrible about being outside. And we all shared our personal truths about what's horrible about being outside in winter. And so I said, I don't like it when I go outside in winter because I get cold and I can't pay attention. And then I asked, who else feels like that? And some of them raised their hands and some of them didn't. And then the next one went on, and so forth. And the question was, what is not great about being outside in winter? And some people were sharing cold feet, it hurts, I just don't like it. Some other people didn't have any answers. But each time somebody shared their truth, there were correlating hands that would go up that also feel that truth. And so when we all got around, I tied it together where it's like we all have our own truths, our own experiences, but we're building our own story here of the commonalities of what makes us a community. And I followed up with the second question about the benefits of being outside in winter. And each and every single one of them had a different answer. And each and every single hand went up for each one of those. So yes, things can be hard. That's the truth. But also there is benefits to that, which is also And something that I had experienced recently was a talk by Nigan Sinclair here. He's a writer for the Winnipeg Free Press. And he talks about two truths as being a truth. Relationships, when you can build a relationship with story of communicating your truth, so much more can happen in many ways. So that's what I have for that. Thanks.
So when this relationship is in balance, learners gain different perspectives, have confidence to share their own stories, feel connected to place, and have listening skills. And the words there are, I share.
Nice.
Yes.
Yes.
We go next. Let's jump to relationship with play. Relationship with play is, well, it's in the name. We value play. We know that play is a need. It's important. It's important for young people, but it's also important for old people. It's important for all people to have play. We know that play requires some things to be truly play, like freedom and choice and time. And I think, play is at the root of learning, our relationship with learning, that when given enough time and choice and freedom, play equals learning. And so just to for Forest and Nature School practitioners to know and believe that to be true. And I think play like is so simple in terms of all the relationships. Relationship with play is just like, let's play and something beautiful will happen. Without freedom and choice and time, we can't keep the relationships in balance. And so it does take a Forest and Nature School practitioner to be very intentional about allowing space and time for that. Relationship with play.
Relationship with play is the most efficient way to decolonize education.
Next.
Play has been removed throughout the years from when you enter the institution. It is slowly extracted. I'm not going to bring up the study, but NASA did a study amongst young infants and was trying to gauge genius level thinking. And then they did it again in grade school, and that number of geniuses scoring it goes down. And then young adults, it goes down further. And by the time we're adults, it's like 2% of all of us. And so that is correlating with extraction of creative thinking, absurd ideas as a possibility. And so relationship with play has been in education since time immemorial through experiential learning, through being absurd and creative. And as a person who is attempting to heal from colonization, playing is one of my ways of repairing. And it feels great. So that's a personal statement. But yes, relationship with play is not just for children, it's for all learners. There's other correlations of experiencing something and failing and trying again. no matter what what do we call it? No matter how hard you fail, you can always learn from
Right.
it. And
We
you
talk
don't
about
necessarily need those 10,000 hours of becoming a master. You just need to start learning through play. So that's what I have. Thank you.
I think honoring the process of play and focusing less on the outcome, which colonization has really told us to focus on the outcomes, and perhaps that's incorrect. Relationship with play. What does it say on our document? But
Well,
play.
we all play. Of course, that's what it says. We all play. I'll read what it says about the balance in a moment. I just wanted to comment. Well, first I was thinking, we could talk forever about each of these relationships. But just a few things that struck me, just the idea of how play is extracted from us through our education, our air quotes education systems, and it being, the fastest way to decolonize education. And just those words again, and I'm sure they're going to come up in the balance, statement around freedom, choice, and time, and thinking about power and trust and all the relationships. And so many practitioners and so many less so children learn, as you said, to stop, like to not play, which is feels kind of silly. And how, with some practitioners, play feels so foreign, right? Like this idea of what do you mean, just play? Like, where are the things I'm going to play with, or how do I play? I don't play. So we all play. That's perfect. When this relationship is in balance, learners feel flow and freedom in their stretch zone. They feel joy and choice and satisfaction.
Great.
Yeah, We All Play was inspired by a book written by Julie Flett. So I just want to honor that there is a children's book called We All Play. I think risk and play are so connected because we know that when kids go outside to play, there's the natural world offers opportunities for risk taking that a school building does not offer. And so relationship with risk for us means that risk is important. Risk is valued. And we need to allow young learners, all learners, to take risks in order to figure out what their limits are and how to manage risk. In the course, we talk about the risky play types. There's eight of them that have been talked about by Sandsetter for many years. But when we think about risky play, we're talking about climbing up high, running quickly, rolling down a hill, wrestling with a buddy, using a tool. We're talking about types of play that may not be allowed in many spaces because it's too scary. But Forest and Nature School, we those ideas and we allow those ideas. It doesn't mean that we're doing it in a way that's unsafe. It means we're doing it in a way where we're mitigating risks. So when we talk about relationship with risk, we're learning as Forest and Nature School practitioners to assess risk and make sure that we're saying no as infrequently as possible and getting to moments of yes. Yes, you can try that. Yes, you can do that. And I truly believe that risky play is really tricky inside. Risky play happens outside. It happens naturally outside. It happens safely outside. So we have a relationship with risk.
Relationship with risk for me, through my context, is I could feel it in my body as the facilitator or the teacher, observing, and that there are different zones when I can intervene, to help mitigate a situation from escalating or harm. So I would step in and use my power if I had to, but there's the green zone of like, yeah, this is risky. I don't like it, but I'm just going to stand here and observe and see where this goes. I don't believe that's malpractice in any way. It's an opportunity for them to see how it feels in their body or what are the benefits and what is not the benefits. A yellow is wow, things are looking a little bit outside of our agreement when it comes to safe play in this space. So I'm going to move in closer and really pay attention. For example, tree climbing, I can feel that in my body as an observer, as somebody who's an adult and who is in charge here, quote unquote. And the higher they go, the more concerned I get. And there's expectations for tree climbing that we've already discussed. But naturally, we're learning, and so we're going to discover what our personal limits are at. The yellow zone is that fine line. You're not yet interrupting, but you're nearby. And the red zone is something is happening or has happened, and you're responding to it. So, that's where intervention needs to happen, where a firm, please stop. What's your plan? And let's work a way through this that has you come down or a little bit to a safer height. Of course, that's very difficult to be approaching a situation in a strength-based way and allowing it for it to continue. Another one I had to build a relationship was sledding in the winter down hills, so high speeds. Personally, in my own life, I've experienced way too many harmful incidences to be comfortable at any age sledding down a hill. But when you work as a team or when you decide together as a risk mitigation, then things will work out because there's a plan. So that's what I have with that is some personal context on a person, quote unquote, in charge of young learners. Before we continue on, an older person in one of our facilitation circles shared that they got into a lot of risky situations with just children around. It's a different era. There's a lot more people roaming outside freely and unsupervised. And I think the most impactful thing I learned was she said, I wish somebody was around to stop us. So that is our role is to allow it, but also to have the power to be there for that. So anyways, that's what I have.
When I think about relationship with risk, in order for it to work, it needs to be a reciprocal relationship between the educator and the learner, that like those conversations about risk. We truly need to trust the learner to tell us, what's going on for them and what their plan is, and And then the educator needs to have some boundaries, so that things are safe. And so when we think about a reciprocal relationship with risk taking, we hear a lot less, like way more no's, and a lot of like, yeah, let's try this or let's see what happens, because we have really solid dynamic risk assessment, which is what Adrian was talking about with that green, yellow, and red. We are thinking about what is my role as the educator while learners are taking risks. Relationship with risk is such a cool relationship because you don't see it in everyday spaces, or when you do see it, like at a playground or something, you hear lots of adults saying no. Whereas at forest and nature schools, if we're doing it right and if risk is in balance, we see kids taking some really amazing risks while being safe. And so, what beautiful skills for your learners to have lifelong about how to dynamically assess risk. Those skills will be transferred to so many other things in their life, as they grow and they learn. So,
So, when this relationship is in balance, learners have physical literacy, can assess personal risk, have regulated bodies, and experience their growth zone. And you know what the words are there? We are safe.
Ah, right.
Right? I just love that relationship with risk. We are safe. Like, if that's not the message.
All right, where are we at? We're at
Relationship with learning.
relationship with learning, and that's our last
Number
one, right?
seven. Yes.
Okay. So, Adrian talked about this earlier about how relationship with learning was like the last relationship to show up. And I think Adrian and I in the beginning was like, it's called Forest and Nature School. Learning is like part of the whole thing. But what we learned as we started teaching about the relationships is that we needed relationship with learning, for many reasons, but one main reason is to help educators and early childhood educators learn how to talk about forest and nature school as learning. How do we document it? How do we talk about it? How do we justify it? How do we think about curriculum in this context? So for folks who are working within colonized systems, this relationship is really important, because people who have power in those systems are asking, how are the children learning? What's happening? And so we as Forest and Nature School advocates and allies need to say, we have a relationship with learning and it's strong and it's present, and learn how to, I guess, convince everybody else that we are indeed learning. And that no matter what is happening at Forest and Nature School, curriculum emerges on its own. It doesn't need to be initiated by an adult or an educator. That curriculum comes from the land, and it will be present no matter what. And so learning about that and figuring out what that means for every educator within all sorts of systems. Yeah, relationship with learning.
Relationship with learning in the context that I have been learning is it's so old that it seems new. So this type of learning or this style of learning is how we learned our role and responsibility as human creatures to live in balance with Mother Earth. And it's a powerful message. There's always powerful messages that, and that's through language. Indigenous languages come and are about the land. It's all verb based. So for the most part. It's relationship with one another. Relationship with learning is a experiential experience, the experiential learning process. I believe that is highly valuable, and what I've seen and experienced from the participants and the learners that I've gotten to work with alongside during this process.
When
And
we think
that
about
it never stops, never stops. Thank you.
I think both Adrian and I would consider ourselves experiential educators, which means we are making sure that we are learning by doing, that we are not sitting and listening as learners, that our whole body is engaged. But without talking and reflecting about what we just did, the learning actually doesn't necessarily happen. And so we think about the experiential learning cycle as a way to teach young people how to learn. And that can be through reflection. And so if I think about my relationship with power at Forest and Nature School, I'm not teaching the children the curriculum, but I am certainly teaching them how to be reflective, to notice that they just learned something, to say out loud, that they experience success. And so I facilitate reflection. And that's where I hold a lot of power at Forest and Nature School. And I think that's really important for how I want to educate. I want to teach kids how to highlight what is happening, what and how to use that new knowledge in their everyday lives. So, yeah, relationship with learning.
I want to add the biggest key for me to have a relationship with this relationship is to understand that inquiry is utmost importance. So whatever the learner's learning about is what I as an educator will continue to help them build upon. So by that frequent and often visitation of the same space, we're going to build on what you're wondering about. What am I wondering about? And we're going to pay attention and we're going to wonder together and we're going to learn. Thank you.
As you both spoke in my head, oh, so many of the other relationships were ping-ponging, right? Like off of each other. Inevitably, it's so strongly connected. So, relationship with learning, when this relationship is in balance, learners can be self-directed, experience mastery, have a sense of wonder, are curious, and have reflective skills. It's like y'all wrote this. Which you did. And so the words for this, and again, this goes back to when you're talking about relationship with land, and Adrian, I think you had said this. When I play outside all day, I learn. When I play outside all day, I learn. We go outside, right? So, seven relationships, and I know that was the short version because we could go into so much more for each one, and the time has gone fast. How did they come to be shared with CNEC? How did this become so central to the work that CNEC is now doing with Forest and Nature School practitioners?
I mean, it could be a long story, but it also could be a fairly short story. I think, around 2020, maybe 2019, there was conversations about the Child and Nature Alliance of Canada Forest and Nature School Practitioners course curriculum and whether or not it was a good fit for the facilitators who were leading these courses at the time. And I think there was an ask to do some reflection on that. And I got pretty excited because I love thinking about, how to teach in the best way possible in the context that we're in. And shortly after that, ask COVID happened, and it allowed Adrian and I time and space, and I guess freedom to play with the curriculum, and think about it in a new way. Think about what was missing, but what was not missing, and what should remain. I think, asking Adrian at the beginning to help with this made me feel a little bit nervous, because to decolonize something is a big ask. And so I think COVID was a gift for us to have the time and to slow right down and really to have some good conversations about what we wanted the relationships to be. And they weren't relationships yet, but they are now. And yeah, like Adrian talked about, there was six for about a year, and then there was seven. I remember someone asked, like, so is there going to be eight relationships or nine? Like, when does this stop? But we've been at seven for almost 3 years. And so, yeah, when they are in balance, they are truly a beautiful tool. So I think we're done for now. But yeah, I think, I presented the relationships to CNEC, and they were really ready to embrace them and listen. And really think about decolonizing their curriculum. And so we just have been going from there. And I think the national team has also embraced the seven relationships. And I think the course is better for it.
Great. The seven relationships. Is a piece of reconciliation readiness. It is an answer to specific calls to action from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's report, the calls to action. I'm going to name the number, but at the same time, I'd like you to be curious. I invite our listeners to be curious on which one the seven relationships answer, which one of the TRC calls to action it is. The seventh fire prophecy in the eighth fire, the Anishinaabe prophecies. Six is when Canada was created. The knowledge, the language, and the gathering needed to go underground for obvious reasons or not so obvious reasons. So Canada's relationship forced us to put our connection on pause. The seventh fire is Indigenous peoples healing from all of that relationship. And that's what we're doing. We're rediscovering language. We're rediscovering original place names. We're rediscovering what it means to be part of community and kinship, and that's our role right now. That's a part of truth and reconciliation, is to share truth. The eighth fire prophecy talks about non-Indigenous peoples coming to the table, and we're holding hands and moving together again in a good way, both in Indigenous and not. There'll be a new people. They're called the create wellness and balance again. I believe that's our responsibility to climate justice and climate action. So, to me, the seven relationships are just a mechanism, a tool to find things that are out of balance. And when we consider that, we can see where we need to do some work. And that we're hopeful for a bright future, because it's education that got us here, and it's education that'll get us out, as Justice Senator Marie Sinclair has said. This is for people who are too afraid to do the wrong thing and not doing anything at all. So with that, Miigwech, thank you for having me.
It's been a delight to be here with both of you today. I feel so full. Reconciliation readiness. Too afraid to do the wrong thing. It's great guiding. There's so much here for forest and nature school practitioners, but for all of us as human beings, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly feel the seven relationships in other contexts. So, yes, they have been an assessment tool for many contexts outside of forest and nature school as well. So, yeah, I'm really happy to have, been given an hour to talk about this with you, Monica. I appreciate it.
Well, and I hope it's the beginning of other conversations. And this is definitely going to be, I think, an episode that, all forest and nature school practitioners listen to. I think it really helps to ground ourselves in it, particularly those going through the course, and outside of that context completely. The way that you both talked about the relationships, it was tangible, with great depth, and just like simple and true,
Thank you.
So,
Thank you.
thank you for your work and for sharing.
Our pleasure.
This episode was part of a special podcast series called Learning to Listen, CNAC's Reconciliation in Practice. Thank you for listening. To learn more about our work at the Child and Nature Alliance of Canada, and to access resources and professional development opportunities for supporting outdoor play and learning, follow us on Instagram or Facebook and check out our website, www.childnature.ca. The Child and Nature Alliance of Canada is a national charitable nonprofit organization headquartered on the unceded and unsurrendered traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe. If you learned something from this podcast, consider supporting our work at www.childnature.ca/donate-now.